Imagine a world where poverty is optional, where working 15 hours a week is the norm, and where everyone receives enough money to meet their basic needs, no questions asked. Sound like fantasy? According to Rutger Bregman, these ideas aren't just possible, they're practical solutions backed by compelling evidence. We live in an era of unprecedented wealth and technological capability, yet our imagination remains trapped in outdated thinking. For most of human history, we've been defined by scarcity. Now we face a different challenge, learning to live in abundance. The problem isn't resources, it's vision. We've conquered many ancient problems but haven't developed new dreams to replace them. Our politics has become managerial rather than transformative. When was the last time you heard a politician articulate a truly inspiring vision of the future? We've become so focused on maintaining what we have that we've forgotten how to imagine what could be. In 1930, economist John Maynard Keynes predicted that by 2030, technological progress would enable a 15-hour work week. Initially, this prediction seemed on track as work weeks declined from 60-plus hours to around 40 in most industrialized countries. Henry Ford discovered workers accomplished more in 40 hours than in 60 due to reduced fatigue and better focus. By mid-century, futurists predicted Americans might work just 22 hours weekly by 2000. But around 1980, the decline in working hours stopped. Despite continued economic growth and technological advancement, the work week remained fixed at 40 hours in most developed countries, with many working even longer, especially in America. We chose consumption over leisure, translating productivity gains into more stuff rather than more time. The result? A paradox where we're materially richer than ever, but time poorer, constantly busy, stressed, and exhausted. The case for a shorter work week extends beyond personal happiness. Overwork poses serious health risks. Working 55 hours weekly instead of 40 increases stroke risk by 33%, while also raising risks of heart disease, mental health problems, and premature death. Environmental benefits are significant too, as working less means less commuting and consumption and more time for low-carbon community activities. Shorter work weeks could also address unemployment through better distribution of available work, as Germany demonstrated during the Great Recession with successful work-sharing programs. Working less would promote gender equality by addressing the second shift, the disproportionate unpaid care work women perform that limits their career opportunities and contributes to the gender pay gap. Most importantly, reduced work hours would restore our most precious resource, time to be present with children, care for aging parents, engage in our communities, pursue creative passions, and live more fully human lives. In 2009, a London charity gave 13 homeless men $3,000 each with no strings attached. Rather than squandering it, the men transformed their lives, taking gardening classes, enrolling in college, reconnecting with family. Within a year, most had stable housing, and several were working or in training. The experiment cost $50,000 total, far less than years of conventional services. This exemplifies a powerful idea gaining global momentum. Direct, unconditional cash transfers may be the most effective anti-poverty tool. Universal Basic Income, UBI, proposes giving everyone regular cash payments sufficient for basic needs, regardless of work status. Evidence from Kenya, India, Namibia, Brazil, and elsewhere shows recipients typically invest in education, housing improvements, and small businesses. Nutrition improves, and psychological well-being increases dramatically. Contrary to critics' fears, alcohol consumption doesn't rise, and people continue working. Why is giving money so effective? Poverty consumes mental bandwidth with financial worries, creating a cognitive tax that impairs decision-making. A basic income removes this mental burden, allowing people to think more clearly and plan ahead when their basic needs are secured. The basic income debate has gained urgency as automation threatens labor markets. AI and robotics now perform tasks once considered uniquely human, from driving vehicles to diagnosing diseases and writing articles. A 2013 Oxford study suggested 47% of U.S. jobs face high automation risk in coming decades, affecting both blue and white-collar professions. Rather than resisting automation, we should focus on distributing its benefits widely. If machines produce more with less human labor, the resulting wealth could fund a basic income that shares productivity gains broadly. Basic income could also support valuable unpaid work, childcare, elder care, community service, artistic creation, and non-commercial scientific research. Our society heavily values paid employment as a source of income, meaning, and moral worth. Yet anthropologist David Graeber found 37% of British workers believed their jobs made no meaningful contribution to the world. A basic income could help address this distortion by reducing dependence on potentially meaningless work. Could we actually end poverty? For most of human history, this question would have seemed absurd. Poverty was seen as inevitable, a natural state that could at best be marginally alleviated through charity. But our perspective has shifted dramatically. We now understand poverty as a solvable problem of resources and political will. Global extreme poverty has fallen from 42% of the world's population in 1981 to less than 10% today. Basic income offers a direct approach by ensuring everyone can meet their basic needs. The cost would be substantial, but not prohibitive, about 2-3% of GDP in the United States, roughly equivalent to military spending. Funding could come from higher taxes on wealth and high incomes, carbon taxes, resource dividends, or redundant programs. While basic income could address poverty within countries, global inequality presents an even greater challenge. Birth location remains the biggest determinant of economic prospects. Open borders would likely do more to reduce global poverty than any other policy. Economists estimate that removing migration barriers could double world GDP by allowing people to move where their labor is most productive. Even partial liberalization of immigration restrictions could generate trillions in economic gains. Throughout history, ideas once deemed utopian have become reality. Abolishing slavery, women's suffrage, civil rights all seemed impossible before reshaping society. Ideas can lie dormant for decades before transforming the world. Neoliberal economics, dominant since the 1980s, began as fringe concepts in the 1940s and 50s until economic crises created their opportunity. The same could happen with this book's ideas. As automation disrupts labor markets, climate change intensifies, and inequality grows, proposals like basic income could shift from fringe to mainstream. Pilot programs are already underway worldwide. Societies typically maintain equilibrium until crisis forces transformation, a moment we may be approaching as multiple crises converge. Utopian thinking matters not because utopias are fully achievable, but because they expand our sense of possibility. They challenge us to imagine better ways of organizing society rather than merely managing decline. These ideas aren't fantasies, but are grounded in evidence, experiments, and historical precedents, offering practical paths toward reducing poverty, increasing freedom, and creating more meaningful lives. The question isn't whether these changes are possible, it's whether we have the imagination to pursue them.